or to fast last Yom Kippur. But still, I was a woman who'd lost her parents, who'd survived a dozen surgeries and emerged with metal implants in my jaw, the right side of my face sunken and scarred, and an eye that drooped. In my 28 years, I hadn't gotten much. I deserved this. "Hello? Hold for Lisa Stark, please," came Lisa's assistant's sing-song. My breath rushed out of me. Lisa was my executive at the studio. If she was the only one on the call, then this was the end of the road, the pass, the thanks but no thanks, the no. I pushed my hair, lank, brown, unwashed for the last 3 days, behind my ears and sat on my bed. I would keep my dignity intact. I would not cry until the call was over. I had told myself to expect bad news, told myself 1,000 times that the numbers were not in my favor. Each year, the network ordered hundreds of potential new programs, giving writers the thumbs up and the money to go off and write a pilot script. Of those hundreds of scripts, anywhere from 2 to 3 dozen would actually be filmed, and of those, only a handful, maybe 4, maybe 6, maybe as many as 10, would get ordered to series. My sitcom, The Next Best Thing, loosely based on my own life with my grandmother, had made the first cut 3 months ago. I'd quit my job as an assistant at 2 Dave's Productions in order to work full-time on the script. Progressing through the steps from a single-sentence pitch, a college graduate who's been laid off and her grandmother who's been dumped moved to an upscale assisted living facility in Miami where the girl tries to make it as a chef and the grandmother tries to live without a boyfriend, to a paragraph-long pilot summary, then a beat sheet detailing each scene, then a 12-page outline, and finally, a 40-page script. For months, I'd been writing, holed up in my bedroom or carrying my computer to a neighborhood coffee shop, where I was surrounded by my more attractive peers, the ones who carried on long, loud telephone conversations in which they used the words, "my agent," as often as possible, and did everything but prop tip cups and writer at work signs in front of their laptops. I wrote draft after draft, turning each one over to the studio that had funded my efforts and to the network that would, I hoped, eventually air them. I considered each round of notes. I cut and edited, rewrote and rewrote again. I pored over books for expectant parents to give my characters just the right names, and I spent days in the kitchens of local restaurants so I could nail the details of my heroine's job. 2 weeks ago, I delivered the absolutely, positively final draft. I'd brushed my lips against every single one of the pages, kissing each one lightly before I slid the script into the hole puncher, then slipped the brass brads through the holes and pushed them shut. To celebrate, I'd taken Grandma out to lunch at the Ivy, at her insistence. My grandmother, a petite and stylish woman of a certain age, was a great fan of the tabloids. Any restaurant where the paparazzi were a regular presence on the sidewalk was a place she wanted to be. When we walked up to the stand, the maitre d' looked at me, in a plain black cotton shift dress and 5-year-old zippered leather boots, with my laptop tucked under my arm, and gave a small but discernible shrug. My grandmother stepped toward him, smiling. If I dressed to maximize comfort and minimize attention, in shades of black and gray and blue with a single necklace and sensible shoes, my grandmother had style enough for the both of us. That day, she wore a black and white linen dress with a black patent leather belt and black canvas espadrilles with bows that tied at her ankles. Her necklace was made of vintage Bakelite beads and poppy red, and she had a matching red patent leather clutch in her hand and a red silk flower tucked behind one ear. "How are you today?" she asked. "Fine." The host's eyes lingered on her face as he tried to figure out if she was someone he should know, a screen star of yesteryear of one of the Real Housewives' mothers. "This is my granddaughter," said Grandma, and gave me a brisk poke in the small of my back. I stumbled obediently toward the podium with a can-you-believe-her look on my face, wishing I'd worn a necklace or a flower or thought to carry a pretty purse or to have purchased one in the first place. "Ruthie is a writer." The man behind the podium could barely suppress his wince. Writer, of course, was not the magic word that would